Welcome to the Spirituality of Strength Training with your host, Anna Willard. This podcast is dedicated to bring you knowledge, wisdom, inspiration, and guidance to wherever you may be on your health journey. For those who are new to me, I am a kettlebell strength coach, a movement nerd ninja, and an empowerment coach on a mission to bring you hope through our health. The root word of health comes from wholeness. The root word of wholeness comes from holy. Despite our differences with religion and spiritual beliefs, we are all human beings with a body that is designed to reflect this holiness through our health. It wasn't until my 7th year as a health profession where I went into a deep awakening of understanding what does it mean to train my spirit and to heal my spirit through the physical. You'll hear a little bit more about my story from other health professionals, from strength coaches, psychiatrists, spiritual gurus and leaders, to other people who talk about the importance of our health as a community body and the health of our planet as well. This podcast is to allow us to step into our whole health, mentally, physically, emotionally, and spiritually. Thank you for being here. If you love what you hear, I encourage you to subscribe. If you want more inspiration and quotes from these podcasts, I encourage you to follow me on Instagram at @Anna_Willard_. I encourage you to do a little bit of a movement, either a yoga flow, go for a walk, sit in nature, as you enjoy this episode. All right, Strongholds. We're live, and I am here at Faith Lutheran Church. Is that right?
Yep.
Okay. And this is Pastor Shannon.
Yes.
And it was one of those nights where I was reminded it was Ash Wednesday, and I was like, oh, I guess I should go to church. So I found this place just on Google because it was walking distance from the part-time job that I have. I was like, great. It's good to know our website works. Yeah. So, Shannon, can you share a little bit more about what you do here and what your role is at the church?
Yeah. So, do you want me to look there?
No, you're not. We can hear it now.
So, I'm actually the pastor here. So, I'm in my 9th year of being a pastor, ordained pastor. Before that, I was youth director, and so I've been in ministry for many years. Uh-huh. But yeah, I came to Faith Lutheran and Seattle a little bit over 2.5 years ago. Okay. I came from the Midwest, and so I've been the pastor here since then.
Awesome. Yeah. Now, you sent me a little bit of your story that mm-hmm. I read.
Yeah.
What got you involved into becoming a pastor? Because like when I first walked in, it was like very refreshing for me. I'm like, a woman's gonna preach. Oh my goodness, I'm in the right spot. Like, how did you feel that calling, and what were some of the things that you had to work through as a woman to become in this leadership position?
Yeah, I had actually thought about being a pastor for a lot of years when I was in high school, but I never really felt that last push, like, oh, that's really what I want to do. And I had gone through the whole idea of like, I'm going to be a doctor, I'm going to be a child therapist, I'm going to be, you know, the whole realm. But I had always been really active growing up in church. And when I was in middle school, my parents got divorced, and it was not a great divorce. It was pretty ugly. And my church loved me through that, and my siblings and my family. And so that had always been a really important part to me, was my church family and the people there. And so when I went to college, I majored in elementary education in early childhood, and I did my student teaching, and I hated it. My sister, I have a twin sister, and she's a teacher, and she loves it, and it's so great, and she's an amazing teacher, but it was just not the right fit for me.
Uh-huh.
And so after graduating, I ended up getting a job as a youth director.
Okay.
And during that time, I had always kind of thought, oh, I wouldn't like seminary because I wouldn't like classes, or I wasn't sure what I would preach about each week, and got really nervous about that. But when I was a youth director, I started working with all these ages, but then I was starting to get frustrated that I didn't know more and that I wanted to know more and didn't know where to find it. And I worked with these two really great pastors who sat me down one day and said, you know, we don't want you to leave, but you need to go. Mm. And they said, you're asking questions and you know, there's more that you want to do. Yeah. And for the larger church, we really feel that you need to be really spending some time discerning seminary and thinking about seminary. And now growing up, I had wonderful pastors and yeah. they were all, I would always ask questions and, you know, I shadowed my pastor from my home church for a day and he really put in everything, not everything, but a lot of things that pastors do.
Okay.
But so I spent probably about 6 months in really intense prayer and discussion and exploration and a lot of tears, yeah. a lot of fighting with God.
Yeah. But,
at the church where I was working at, and one day she said, well, you know, you're going to seminary, right? And I said, well, what do you mean? I said, I didn't say that. And she goes, well, you're talking about when you go to seminary, not if. Mm. Now, I was really lucky in that I have always had female pastors in my life, and that wasn't an anomaly. When I went to seminary, I did find out that there were a lot of people who haven't had that experience.
Yes, because you're like my first. I was like mm-hmm. so excited inside. Mm-hmm. I was like, there's a woman in yeah. teaching us tonight.
Yeah. And it is interesting too with reactions I get from people.
Yeah.
You know, someone I was telling you before we started that I did, I had a couple funerals this weekend.
Right.
And at one of them, it was kind of interesting because someone came up to me and said, what do I call you? You know, like, are you a priest, are you, you know, and it's not, rude. It's not,
right.
It's just curiosity.
Right.
You yeah. know, I look different. I'm young. I, uh-huh. you know, like to dress a little nicer, yeah. you know, fashionable, whatever, you know, and I'm female. And uh-huh. those are, you know, kind of counter to what a lot of people assume or know or has been historical
right.
ministry.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So how has that, I mean, you've mentioned, growing up, you had a lot of female pastors, which mm-hmm. is so cool.
Yeah.
But how has it been for you career-wise, kind of not breaking the mold, mm-hmm. but just as a female in this position?
Yeah. That's a good question. It's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And it really varies. In some aspects, people are super excited about it.
Yeah.
And get really, and they're really supportive.
Uh-huh.
Here at Faith was actually the first church, or they were the church that had the first female pastor in this whole area of the country.
Oh, wow.
So it wasn't, so again, it's not unusual for them to have a female pastor uh-huh. here because of their history.
Got it.
That's not everywhere.
Uh-huh.
So I will say I've gone up against some really crappy things that people have said.
Uh-huh.
I've had someone once say to me, I don't think you're smart enough to be a pastor. I think you're a woman, so you're not smart enough. You're not capable enough. Women can work with the children, but that's it.
Mm.
That wasn't a great day. And that wasn't a great conversation.
Yeah.
You know, in the past I have had, I mean, and my church in the Midwest was amazing and wonderful.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
But you know, I actually did have one person who would leave when I preached.
Uh-huh.
It was really neat though, because the ushers made it a game to try and keep him in the sanctuary
oh,
as
no
long as
way.
Possible.
Oh, that's hilarious.
You know, and he eventually came around.
Yeah.
But just in general, there's also other things that, you know, people would say things to me that they would never say to a man,
mm-hmm.
you know, and make comments either about my looks or, you know, put their arm around me in ways that I'm not super comfortable with.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm not the only one that happens to.
Yeah.
I have to say in the realm of things, I have not had it nearly as difficult as a lot of my colleagues have.
Okay.
I've been really, really lucky about that.
Mm-hmm.
Because I hear stories from other female pastors where
yeah,
they've had different experiences.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Now, where does your strength come into play with this? Because mm-hmm. I know you've been really active throughout like most of your life, right? You mm-hmm. grew up playing sports.
Yep.
What sports did you play?
So I was a runner mainly.
Okay.
I did cross country and track.
Nice.
And then I also loved gymnastics.
Oh, fun.
I wasn't very good at it,
hey,
but I loved it.
Hey, you don't have to be good at it to have fun, right?
Exactly. So I've always been a runner. I always enjoyed lifting weights and,
uh-huh.
you know, I loved all the technical, events and track and field.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
So that's always been a lot of fun for me.
Uh-huh. Now, do you mind sharing part of your story just so the listeners
yeah.
know kind of like the journey that you took as an athlete mm-hmm. and then kind of, I wouldn't say hit rock bottom, but just that journey of your own health
mm-hmm.
during a difficult time in your life.
Yeah. I don't mind sharing it all. And okay. I would say, yeah, kind of was rock bottom.
But you had Ben and Jerry's.
But I had Ben and Jerry's, so it was all good. So because I've always been active, I've really had two times in my life where there were significant shifts in needing to understand my body and needing to understand and listen to what it was trying to tell me. Mm-hmm. The first time was actually in seminary. And I don't think I told you this part before. So the first one was in seminary. When I got to seminary, I really had a hard time with the transition. So I really wanted to do well. It was the time that I really found something I was good at and wanted to thrive in that. I have more perfectionist tendencies than I like to admit. And during that first semester, I actually started having anxiety attacks, and I didn't know what it was. I actually just thought I was going crazy, and I didn't tell anybody because I didn't know how to say, I can't sleep, I can't function, I can't, you know, I'm having these heart palpitations. I mean, they were full blown panic attacks. I just didn't know that that's what it was.
Wow.
And so I did that year, I did 3 marathons and 4 half marathons, which is terrible for your body.
Yeah.
And I remember I was running so I could sleep.
Yep.
And so it was kind of my drug of choice, so to speak. It was my self-medication. I remember once spraining my ankle and sitting down in the mud because it was raining out, and still made myself get up and finish an 11-mile run.
Wow.
It wasn't healthy. And so as that summer came to being, I had a really full-out panic attack that ended me in the hospital and that kind of stuff.
Oh my goodness.
And so I met with my doctor, and she said, you need to keep moving or keep working out because you're going to go crazy otherwise if you don't.
Right,
you know?
Right.
She said, but I want you to stop running for 3 months. And so I stopped running for a while.
Was that kind of took your breath away?
It did, because I didn't know what else to do.
Right.
It's all I knew.
Right.
And I also, that was when I really spent a lot of time then. I found a really good therapist. Mm-hmm. I started on meds. Mm-hmm. And I really had to start working through all the pieces. Mm-hmm. The good thing was I actually found the YMCA. Mm-hmm. And when I walked into the room one night, I went to a body pump class.
Oh, okay.
Because I was like, well, that's the only class I recognize on the schedule. had it handed to me because I wasn't ready for
right.
Work. But the instructor walked into the room and said, okay, you're my Thursday night team. And my heart soared because I had a team.
Yeah.
And that's what I was missing.
Yeah.
It wasn't, what I realized was I was really missing a team, because since I was 12, I had always had a team.
Right.
Either that I coached or that I was a part of.
Yeah.
And suddenly I was on my own.
Uh-huh.
So that was one time. And then the next was, I had really gotten into Les Mills and I became an instructor. And so I did body attack and body pump and body stuff and all of that kind of thing. And you know,
did you have to teach cycling?
That was
I didn't. Oh, then we balance each other out.
Yeah.
Les Mills for the cycling.
Yeah. With our hand, yeah. And so I had really gotten into that. And so I was in my first call and I was in Iowa and I was teaching at the Y, great group of people, amazing community. But you know, when you do the same thing over and over again, your body starts to plateau.
Right.
And so again, I never really learned how to do it well. I always, had a really good work ethic and would push hard and wanted to be the person who worked the hardest.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a definite difference between working hard and working smart.
Yeah.
And I was not working smart. I was just working hard. Mm-hmm. And my body started to take its toll.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had started to gain a little bit of weight. I wasn't getting any stronger.
Mm-hmm.
So I just started adding more. So then I ran a marathon and I had my fastest time, but I also got plantar fasciitis.
Yeah.
And then I started getting a nagging hip thing, and I only took a week off between my marathon and starting back in.
Wow.
And then a friend of mine, we thought it sounded like a good idea to try CrossFit together.
Yeah.
And so instead of taking anything else out, I just kept adding on.
Mm-hmm.
And so we did a competition 6 weeks in. We competed intermediate, and I was doing a move that I'd only done once before and had no business doing, and I herniated a disc in my back.
Yeah.
And that was just a great big spiral for me. I was in so much pain.
Yeah.
I couldn't tie my own shoes. I couldn't. So for 8 months, we were trying everything with cortisone shots and physical therapy and taking breaks. And, for me, working out is very, very much mental, emotional, physical, spiritual.
Mm-hmm.
And so I lost my thing that kept me connected.
Yeah. You know, I wasn't with people anymore. Yep. I wasn't. And, you know, I like people.
Yeah.
I like my people. You know, so I lost my community. I ended up having surgery. Mm-hmm. And I was like, all right, now I can start coming back. And right about that time, that was when my husband, who's also a pastor, found out that he was interviewing in Seattle. Mm-hmm. He had been offered a position in Seattle. And I was not excited to leave where I was at.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I'm very open with this because I feel like our stories, our vulnerable stories, are important to tell. Mm-hmm. And that realism is important. Mm-hmm. And so it was a really hard time in our marriage. Mm-hmm. We'd only been married 2 years and we weren't communicating well. And I was really, really mad that this was coming up. And he was really mad that I wasn't being super supportive. And so he ended up getting the call out here. But the way that it works with pastors is it just takes a long time before you find the right church.
Got
and
it.
The whole process takes a while.
Mm-hmm.
So we actually were apart for 9 months.
Wow.
And, you know, that was probably a time for us that we needed to work through some things too. And,
uh-huh.
and we did. We, you know, again, therapy is a great thing.
Yeah.
So when I moved out here, that was another really rough transition because I loved where I was at. I was
yeah.
at the top of my game as far as ministry, even if I wasn't physically.
Mm-hmm.
When I got here, I had no friends. Like mm-hmm. I was sad. And I,
well, and this city
yeah.
is a hard city to make friends in.
It is.
I've been here since 2010.
Yeah,
it's still hard.
I went to a bar class the first week I moved here, and I talk with everybody.
So,
so I'm chatting with the girl next to me, and she wasn't mean. She wasn't rude. She was just very matter of fact. And she goes, "Why are you talking to me?" And I said, "Because I have no friends."
That sounds so Seattle.
And so that was it was just a really cool transition with all of that.
Right.
And I think I told you you know, walked up to the 7-Eleven, and which is right up the street, and got Ben and Jerry's and mm-hmm. ate a pint of ice cream. And then I did it again a few days later and again. And I would sit and I would cry and I would eat ice cream and just think, you know, and it was interesting because I wasn't actually like in a depressive state.
Mm.
You know, but it was just I didn't know how to move forward.
Mm.
And I was really unhappy with how I felt physically. I was really unhappy with how I felt emotionally. I was really unhappy with not, I just felt lost.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I didn't know and I didn't know how to start back. I knew I needed to start working out again. I knew I needed to get back in shape. I knew I needed to find some grounding.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew I would find community if I did that,
mm-hmm.
but I didn't know where to go
yeah.
because, I either knew how to do everything or nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know how to do anything in between.
Mm-hmm. The thing that you sent me to read, you mentioned something about wanting to feel normal again.
Mm-hmm.
And my question comes from, is normal an aspect of control? Do we want to feel normal so that we feel in control?
Wow, that's profound. you know, probably.
Yeah.
Actually, yeah. Because being in control of something means you know what to expect.
Right.
And so feeling normal feels like you know your patterns,
mm-hmm.
you know what's coming at you, you know
mm-hmm.
what you're able to do. You have control over what workouts you're doing or what,
right.
How your body's reacting.
Yeah.
Or how your mind's reacting.
Mm. That's, yeah. That's
yeah.
huge too.
Yeah.
So what got you from that place from Ben
mm-hmm.
and Jerry's to move forward? Cause I know there's a lot of guests who've been on the show and including myself have dealt with back injuries
mm-hmm.
that literally put us on our back of like, okay, you need to either recalibrate your thoughts or attitude about a certain process in life.
Mm-hmm.
What direction did that lead you to?
Yeah. So it's interesting the journey that the last 2.5 years have been.
Uh-huh.
Because it sounds like it was very physically driven.
Yeah.
And you could say that it was, but it was actually very holy work. Like very, very holy work.
Mm-hmm.
Especially looking back,
mm-hmm.
I can see, you know, where the
mm-hmm.
piece of it, but I even knew it in the midst of it. So what happened actually was,
so can I
please.
Pause you?
Mm-hmm.
So if, since you knew it in the midst of it, were you say this was like your wrestling with God of just, yeah. I think it was wrestling with who God created me to be.
Ah, okay.
More than anything. Mm. And having to figure out what that created being looked like. Mm. Not what it used to look like. Mm. Not what it used to be as a 20-year-old. Not what it used to look like as a competitive athlete. Or yeah. not what it even used to look like when I was in a different setting. Mm. And so it was part of not even reimagining, but acknowledging who I am now and what that looks like in leadership within the church, because my role in the church shifted a lot to go from a team ministry position to being a solo pastor and having different responsibilities and different learning and growth and experiences and being able to live into some different strengths that I didn't know I had. Mm. And to honor that, and to honor the hard process that goes along with learning new aspects of your vocation. There were all of these pieces and they really intertwined a lot. So what I ended up learning within my physical stuff and within my nutrition really, really intertwined with the stuff I was working on at church, personally and as a congregation.
Yeah. Can you elaborate more on that then?
Yeah. So let me back up just a little bit because it all starts to tie together. Mm-hmm. So what happened was it was about December and a friend of mine knew of a gym out here and he was in Omaha and he's like, you should go try this gym out. Like, I think it's the one you really like. So I went and met the owner and like basically like interviewed him because I was like, I'm not going to the wrong place. Like, I've got to find the right place. And so I started a level 4 CrossFit actually.
Yeah.
And did all the introduction stuff. And as the new year was starting, they were offering a small group or, you know, individual training for outdoors and hiking. Well, my husband's an avid backpacker, climber, all of that.
Yeah.
And so we decided that we would do this together and it would be our date night. And because we needed to find something together, but we also knew we're like, we need to stop like just food because that's not helping us at all.
Yeah.
Like, this isn't even fun anymore to eat out, you know, because it's just like feeling like you're barging yourself.
Yeah.
So we started working with Leanne Wolf. And she's amazing.
Yeah.
On so many levels. And it was interesting because when we started working with her, God, Jeremy and I were so out of shape. Like, I look back and see videos and pictures and stuff. And I'm like, at that time, I could not do one push-up. I couldn't deadlift anything. Like even the bar, like the 45 pound bar. So we were using a PVC pipe. I couldn't do anything. Like I was like, my body usually moves. And I was so embarrassed. And like mortified. And she was super patient and really encouraging and never ever made me feel like I couldn't do something or, that I wasn't capable or wasn't good enough. Like everything. And it wasn't in a cheerleader URA. It's just, we just worked one thing at a time and she would say, okay, now we're going to work this and now we're going to build on. And so she was, I learned really fast that, once she really, really knew what she was doing and, it allowed me to trust her really quickly to know that she wouldn't ask me to do something I wasn't capable of. And then there were these little victories each day of whether it was just being a little bit more flexible or whether it was getting my D down a little bit further in a lunge or whether it was putting 5 pounds on something, you know?
Yeah.
So anyway, so we started working with her and, and that became our date time. And so we looked forward to it and we really enjoyed it. And then, in the spring, she moved to a new gym and we followed her and we started working with nutrition because she said, you know, a large part of your physical is also nutrition. And so we started working on that with, she uses the Precision Nutrition platform. And the great thing about Precision Nutrition is it's one habit at a time. And so you build this foundation and you do one little thing and there's no failure. There's only feedback and you're always working at 1% better. But they also ask a lot of questions in there and there's a lot of reflection and it's daily lessons that are meant to make you think and reflect and, look at yourself in different ways. So pairing, and then your coach, so Leanne was giving me feedback on that. So you know, it was a writing back and forth, but then because we were training with her, we also got to have a lot of conversations. And so it was interesting because the beginning of it, I was like, I can't believe this. This is dumb. Like, I know this stuff, you know, which I didn't. So she's going to listen to this and be like, I didn't know that.
But then you touched on a really good point about this. So keep that going.
So I was like, I know this stuff. And And then the more that you learn, the less you realize you know. Mm-hmm. And so the more I learned, the less I realized that I was, you know, and she would say, a lot of people say that they know this. And maybe they do, but putting it into practice mm-hmm. is very different than knowing something.
Right.
And actually, it turns out I really didn't know nearly as much as I thought I did. But it was so good because she knew just when to push and when to pull back and when to ask me the good questions. But it wasn't just about nutrition. It was about how I was processing things. Or she would point out just little pieces of the roller coaster that I was on, or mm-hmm. my stress levels, or my sleep. She's the one who pointed out that when I get really stressed, I'd stop sleeping and I'd be mm-hmm. waking up in the middle of the night. Mm-hmm. I should have noticed that, but that's why we need coaches to tell us these things, yeah. you know? So yeah, so in the midst of that, then, you know, it's not easy because you have to trust the process.
Yeah.
And you have to trust each of the steps, and there's going to be the highs and the lows and the ups and the downs. And so, you know, I'd lose a little bit of weight and then I'd gain a little bit of weight and lose it. And it wasn't until I really started like focusing on and saying, this is really important. I need to pour more into this and mm-hmm. really start looking at the different aspects of my life and my habits and my choices and my outcomes. Because the other thing about precision nutrition is it's not about good or bad choices. It's about your outcomes and mm-hmm. what are you looking for? Mm-hmm. So I had to look at that. And so in the midst of that, I started asking these same questions about church, mm-hmm. about my congregation, about myself as a leader.
Yeah.
You know, there were pieces that of these lessons that I'd find that I was using in meetings to bring about different conversation. And so I started to realize that my leadership style started to change.
Interesting.
And that I was asking more questions than trying to have the answers. Hmm. And it was more collaborative. Mm-hmm. And so that was part of it, mm-hmm. Of how it started to intertwine.
A couple questions.
Please.
I
can see it on your face.
Yeah. Someone told me they're like, you're a very loud speaker.
No, it's great. I love it.
As an athlete myself, one of the things that I've always thought, my relationship with God is God is the ultimate coach. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I'm learning is just this trust aspect. Mm-hmm. What do you think, or how do you view that statement with your relationship with God, and him being your ultimate coach, with the aspect of what you gave, the perfect analogy of like trusting your coach, mm-hmm. that she would only give you the amount of weight or the movements that you knew that your body was capable. Mm-hmm. How do you relate that to your relationship with God?
Yeah. You know, I don't really always, I know it's a really popular thing to say, oh, God's not going to give you more than you can handle.
Right.
Because yeah, sometimes I think you actually are given more than you're able to handle. But I think then God places people around you to help you handle it. You know, support networks, friends, church communities, even simple things like journaling, mm-hmm. you know, that's part of a support thing of when you're able to process stuff through, because I think the Holy Spirit works in ways that we're not expecting.
Yeah.
And speaks to us when we're least expecting it.
Uh-huh.
And whether the Holy Spirit is speaking to you in a thought process that you have, or when you wake up and realize something, or when you're driving and, mm-hmm. Or a conversation with somebody where something comes either out of your mouth or out of their mouth.
Mm-hmm.
I really believe that God uses other people to speak to us mm-hmm. and to be the supports for us and to help guide us through these really difficult times. But it's trusting that the Holy Spirit is going to do that. Mm. A lot of it, though, is opening ourselves up to listen.
Mm-hmm.
It's Lent, and so one of the mm-hmm. things that we've been doing for worship is Lectio Divina, which is it's an ancient form of divine reading. And mm-hmm. so you hear the same thing over and over again, the same scripture read over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
But I've also been talking a lot about the need for silence.
Mm-hmm.
And that space, because I'm a really fast mover. I move fast, I talk fast, I walk fast, I think fast. I, you know,
go, go, go. We gotta get things done.
I had a mentor once say, you're a speedboat. You need a canoe. And so it's hard to pull back. And so within that, I've been talking about how there's four parts to prayer. Walter Rongren says this. And he said, it's God speaks. Mm-hmm. Or sorry, the first part is we speak mm-hmm. and God listens. Then God speaks and we listen. Mm-hmm. We're pretty good at the first two.
Mm-hmm.
the third part is actually really easy because God will speak back to us. Mm-hmm. Because that's part of the circle. That's part of the complete right. cycle. But if we're not taking the space or time to listen to God, mm-hmm. It's a harder time for us to trust.
Yeah.
And so we trust that God speaks to us.
So just because of my own journey and my mm-hmm. own walk with God, yep. there's been a lot of times where I feel like the injuries that I have occurred has him being like, you need to slow down and listen.
Yep.
Can you relate?
I can totally relate to that.
So what advice do you have for people to listen to God before he's like putting the brakes on your body?
Mm-hmm. Yep. I think it's a lot of it comes back to self-awareness. Mm-hmm. Where do you, where do you find wholeness? Where do you, how are you, balance is a really hard word because I don't know if balance actually exists, where you're always in that equilibrium. Mm-hmm. You know, there's times.
I think of it as a teeter-totter.
Oh my gosh, that's exactly what I was going to say. I'm so not even kidding.
That's too crazy.
yeah, because sometimes you have more on your plate and sometimes yep. you have less. And so it's the balance between, but also, the ELCA, the Lutheran Church okay. in America, has this wonderful thing called the wellness wheel. Mm-hmm. And in the center is our baptism. Mm-hmm. And then on the outside is our spiritual life. Mm-hmm. And then on the inside, it's like different pieces of the pie with physical well-being, mm-hmm. financial well-being, vocational well-being, relationship well-being, and so on and so mm-hmm. forth, emotional well-being, mental well-being. But it, one, it's centered in our baptism, and two, it's surrounded by our spiritual life. Mm-hmm. And so, going back to what you had asked about, you know, where do we find that time to stop or listen mm-hmm, before? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I think it's a process of learning, honestly, along mm-hmm, the way. Mm-hmm. I think we take the wisdom that we've had in our past because sometimes we just have to go through mm-hmm. Good Friday, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. To get to Easter.
Can you elaborate a little bit more about what you mean by Good Friday for yep. those who aren't familiar with that tradition?
Yep. So during Holy Week, right before Easter, we have Maundy Thursday, Good Friday, and then Easter. Mm-hmm. And so Good Friday is the day that Jesus died on the cross. Mm-hmm. And Good Friday is the day where there was the pain, where there was the sorrow, where you have people sitting at the foot of the cross just sobbing. Mm-hmm. And one of the things as Lutherans, we talk about the theology of the cross mm-hmm. and that we do sit at the foot of the cross in a lot of this muck. And it's very messy and it's very painful at the mm-hmm. foot of the cross. Mm-hmm. And you can attribute that to many different parts of your lives, mm-hmm. Of your life. You know, whether it's losing someone who is near and dear to you, whether that is a transition in life, whether that is a divorce, whether that's, you know, any number of things mm-hmm. That, you know, fill in the blank, the things that are hard in life. Mm-hmm. And yet we believe that Christ is also there with us mm-hmm. in the midst of that pain and in mm-hmm. the midst of that sorrow and in the midst of the struggles that we have, that we're not alone. But anyway, so on Good Friday is the day that Jesus died on the mm-hmm. cross. Then there were 3 days of mm-hmm. waiting and not knowing. Mm-hmm. And then there was Easter mm-hmm. Where we celebrate the resurrection. And so we say we are Easter people, meaning we trust in the resurrection, new life, everlasting life, joy, mm-hmm. hope, all of that. But there were 3 days between Good Friday and Easter. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the things to remember is the people who were there on Good Friday didn't know that Easter was coming, mm-hmm. you know, and they sat in that sorrow and they right. sat in that pain and that grief, that deep grief without knowing what was next. Mm-hmm. And we have those times in our lives too. Mm-hmm. And so, but we also know the end of the story too. And mm-hmm. we know of Easter, we know of resurrection, we know, of, and we have the promise that we receive this resurrection too. Mm-hmm. And that's a place of hope.
Yeah. So, cause I'm really fascinated right now with literally the physical walk of Jesus.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And his journey that he had here on life. And I asked this to another professor. I'm curious on what you have to say mm-hmm. about this. What is the significance of the time frame that Jesus came with the fact that they walked barefoot mm-hmm. With the concept that walking was their main way of transportation mm-hmm. and communication. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think there's a lot that we can learn from some of those pieces. Yeah. I mean, it was definitely contextual and it was definitely part of the day, you know, and the fact that they were in the desert and all of that.
Yeah.
But there's something like when you do yoga, you're in bare feet.
Yeah.
You know, and there's something about that grounding.
Yeah.
That I think is really important. You know, when you begin yoga breath or when you begin a yoga practice, you ground yourself first mm-hmm. with those mm-hmm. deep breaths. And mm-hmm. or at least I do. And I imagine yeah. myself being rooted to the ground. And, you know, especially in the Pacific Northwest, we love the outdoors
yeah.
and all of that. And I've always loved running barefoot, you yeah. know, through grass and such. So I think there's a definite sense of grounding ourselves to creation and mm-hmm. to what God has created for us.
Mm-hmm.
But then I also think that with the walking, it's that pause, it's that time,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's relational. You know, Jesus was incredibly relational.
Yeah.
He wasn't looking to get the accolades. He wasn't looking to walk the furthest. He wasn't looking to, you know, he was the opposite of what everyone thought he was going to be.
Right.
Because even when John the Baptist came and was announcing that, you know, one who's coming after me, you know, isn't even, I'm not worthy to untie his sandals even,
mm-hmm.
you know, he was, you know, he knew Jesus and he was still imagining that Jesus was going to come into power and be this
right.
king and be this,
yeah.
you know, and from Jesus's birth, he's been the opposite of all of that.
Uh-huh.
And I think it kind of goes to show us of where are we grounded?
Yeah.
You know, we don't need to only find our self-worth in accolades or in being the most powerful or mm-hmm. being the strongest or being the best. You
mm-hmm.
know, Jesus focused on people mm-hmm. and relationships and, but he also knew to separate himself for time for prayer and time
mm-hmm.
to be alone. He gathered himself with people in the simplest of ways around a meal.
Mm-hmm.
And it was in the very ordinary with bread and wine.
Mm-hmm.
There was nothing fancy about that meal. That was what everybody ate all the time.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't with, you know, fancy feasts or rich food. It was with the ordinary. And he
mm-hmm.
took the ordinary and he blessed it and he made it holy.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think with all of that, it draws us back to what is blessed in the ordinary.
Mm-hmm.
What is blessed in our lives with our relationships?
Yeah.
What is blessed in our time of quiet and silence?
Mm-hmm.
What is blessed as we gather around a meal together?
Mm-hmm.
What is holy ground when we're walking together and when we're walking with each other?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was fascinating. Thank you for that.
Yeah.
You
got your sermon in for the week.
Yeah. Why, please? You mentioned a really good point, which I know even in my own journey as a fitness instructor and as an athlete, where I was striving to have that be the best or like to be the best or to
Me
lift.
Too.
Yeah. Yeah. What advice do you have for people who may be in that, like, I wouldn't say mess, but in the middle of that identity of like, they're striving to be the best. And I'm going to, you can do this all the time. I ask like two questions at once. What's the importance of also still striving your best?
Yep.
But not having that be your identity.
Yep. I think there's a difference between trying to do your best versus being the best.
Ah.
And that's one thing that Leanne has really, really helped me with.
Uh-huh.
Is understanding how I can work hard and how I can play hard and
yeah.
how I can rest hard, you know, and she always says the magic happens in the recovery.
Yeah.
but also stepping back and saying, I don't have to lift them. There's always going to be someone better than you.
Mm-hmm.
That's the thing. No matter what activity you do.
Mm-hmm.
It was funny because she and my husband actually just had a conversation about that of there's always going to be someone who's going to hike a higher mountain than you.
Right.
There's always going to be someone who can lift more than you, all of that. So one, it's not comparing ourselves to those other people,
mm-hmm.
but also honoring the abilities that we have
mm-hmm.
and saying we can work hard at this and do well at it,
mm-hmm.
but God's going to love us regardless of whether we lift the most weight or not.
Right.
And so again, I think it goes back to where is your self-worth or where are you finding that? Where are you finding your self-worth?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, are you searching for your self-worth in being
the perfectionist on your nutrition? Are you finding your self-worth in making sure that you know, only eat protein and veggies? Are you finding your self-worth in lifting the most at the gym or being the best athlete? And if that's the case, I think that takes a really important step of self-awareness to step back and say, why? Why am I finding myself? You know, what is that telling me? What do I get out of it by being the best? Because the thing is there's always going to be a next thing. I mean, you PR on a weight. Well, now what? Or you win first place. Well, there's going to be another competition. You know, what's sustainable? And so I will say, like, that's been a big piece of work for me is having to, because I want to do well. I hate to admit it, but like, I am a words of affirmation person. So I like to be told that I'm doing well, you know,
so cute. I love it.
So you keep working harder so you can be told that you're doing well.
Right.
And so one, it's, being able to tell yourself I'm doing well, you know, or I'm making progress or maybe what is doing well is sustaining, you know, for right now. And also it's finding the different pockets. Like, you can't do everything well all the time.
Right.
I had a supervisor during my internship year in seminary, and he would say, choose two things to do A work in, and then everything else do B work. And no one's going to notice your B work. He's like, but you can't do A work in everything. And that's one thing that I've really struggled with, is that's when I was running myself into the ground, you know, literally and figuratively. That's when things, and when I'm trying to do A work and everything, that's when my relationships start to fail, whether it's friendships or marriage or health, or one of those other areas is going to really take a hit. So it's looking at it and saying, in the big picture of things, what am I going to put my attention to now? You know, so for right now, maybe the majority of my attention is going to be into my workouts and my fitness and my nutrition, because I've got a competition coming up. I just started doing weightlifting competitions.
Oh, fun.
So I did my first one.
Yeah.
It was great. You know, so I will say October, that was a large part of my focus. And then there's other times when you say, okay, I'm going to put more percentage of my energy into my work, because that's what's taking, you know, priority right now, or my relationship, or whatever it is. And it's not that you drop those other things, but again, you only, you know, you can't do more than 100%.
Yeah.
So,
going back to the cross and Jesus and his time here on earth, what is the significance of his crucifixion and the correlation to the times that I've been injured and the times that you have been injured has been like a redirecting of your path and being?
Yep. So I think one of the things to remember is that Jesus has scars. You know, he was nailed on the cross, and it was actually, they say it's his hands, but it was really his wrists and his feet, and his side was pierced. And so he had this woundedness. And even after his resurrection, you know, he saw his disciples and he saw Thomas and said, put your hand, you know, put your fingers in the holes on my arms and on, you know, and touch my side. So Jesus wasn't resurrected and then came back unscathed. You know, he had the marks of his wounds and he had the marks and the scars that were there. And so do we. You know, our injuries and our challenges that we've had, whether it's emotional or physical or mental or spiritual, because a lot of people have been wounded spiritually. And I think it's actually important that we acknowledge that, and talk about it because it is a big place of pain for many people. But it's those scars that still tell part of our story, but they don't have to, dictate who we are now.
Yeah.
You know, they're part of who we are, but it doesn't have to be only who we are.
Yeah.
And it also tells us of what we have overcome and how we've been healed.
Yeah.
Too.
Yeah. When you mentioned with your story of how it was kind of like, when you moved to Seattle and it was like a redirection of your career, a little bit of like the role that you're playing. Do you think injuries kind of allow that redirection of the soul a little bit, similar to kind of how Jesus led through the cross of like, come follow me? And I'm just looking at my own journey of injuries, and again, every time I've had I wouldn't say every time, but most of the time within an injury, it's like my eyes weren't on him mm-hmm. and what he felt, or I felt to be called at that time. Mm-hmm. Do you have anything to add to that?
Yeah, well, I think it kind of goes back to what you're saying with the ultimate coach too, you know, losing your direction mm-hmm. or losing, mm-hmm. you know, and where do you find your direction and where do you find your, hope filled, mm-hmm. you know, or, mm-hmm. I think also, you know, injuries give us time to pause. Mm-hmm. I know every time that I've been injured, I've had to spend a lot more time thinking. Mm-hmm. And in that, I end up having a lot more conversation with God. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's the screaming, crying, why, yeah. you know, the most asked question or the two most asked questions in the Bible are why and how long. Mm-hmm. And I think injuries bring us back to that. Mm-hmm. Is asking why and how long, why did I get injured and how long am I going to be here? Mm-hmm. But I think also then, you know, going back to like some of our faith component with that, it draws us back into bigger conversation mm-hmm. about our life and about what Christ is doing with our lives and mm-hmm. how Christ is and how the Holy Spirit is moving. Because, you know, I've listened to some of your podcasts and heard some of your stories and we've chatted and stuff. It sounds like in some of the more difficult parts of your life, you've had a little more of that time of reflection and more of that time of drawing back and asking some of those deep questions. Mm-hmm. And, you know, for me and my injuries too, it makes me spend a lot more time processing and a lot more time in prayer and a lot more time in, wondering, you know, not necessarily having the answers, but just wondering. Mm-hmm. And for me, because my life is so intertwined mm-hmm. with people and conversations and scripture and preaching and all of that kind of stuff,
right.
it tends to sort of float its way out.
Yeah. A couple of things that comes from that. You mentioned how there's spiritual injuries. Mm-hmm. And I know sometimes growing up with like the injuries that I have had, I've questioned, what have I done? Mm-hmm. Did I do something wrong to get this? Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes the church, at least where I have grown up, has given the message of like, you are given this like curse almost mm-hmm. because of this injury, versus seeing it as a blessing. What advice or anything you have to add on that? Cause I know there can be a lot of like, manipulation, even with people who are born with like a disformed arm. That's not, doesn't look like my arm and it's not the normal.
I get really angry and frustrated at that type of theology.
Yeah.
Because it's so hurtful.
Yeah.
And so detrimental. And in everything I've learned, so untrue.
Uh-huh.
I do not believe that God tests us and to say, you know, are you, you know, and doesn't throw stuff in our way, to say, are you faithful enough? Or are you, you know, and also to say, well, you know, for people who have children who have disabilities, people will be like, oh, well, you know, God chose you because you're so strong. Yeah. Ask any parent and they're going to say, we don't want to be that strong, you know, or we don't want, you know, and it's just,
you're being a bit of a
I hate to say it, but it's just bullshit.
Yeah. Preach it.
Like, God doesn't make things happen to us. God doesn't make, you know, accidents happen or, people get cancer early or anything like that.
Uh-huh.
Our same bodies that have the ability to heal us when we cut ourselves or when mm-hmm. we, you know, get injured are also the same cells that can go out of whack, when cancer happens. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes you just say shit happens mm-hmm. and life is happy. You know, it's not mm-hmm. perfect. We're mm-hmm. in this world where there is violence and where there's difficulties and where there's, illnesses and all of that, but I do not believe in any way that, you know, where people be like, God's not sitting up there trying to smite people or saying you're better than the other. Like, there's one, there's no consistency in that.
Uh-huh.
And two, it goes back to, where is the love in that?
Mm-hmm.
And where is the love for other people? And where is that unconditional love mm-hmm. that is talked about mm-hmm. that is given to us? Mm-hmm. Where is the grace then of what's being given to us? So if you're going to talk about grace or if you're going to talk about God's love, you either believe it or you don't, but there's no middle ground of saying it's for some people and it's not for others. Mm-hmm. clearly I'm sort of passionate about this.
No, that's great. I love it.
But I truly believe in unconditional love and unconditional grace.
Right.
And yeah, there's consequences to things that we do to one another, and there are consequences of choices that we make, mm-hmm. but that's on them. Mm-hmm. You know, for our sin or all of that, like when God looks at us, you know, God sees Christ in us.
Yeah.
We call that actually the happy exchange. when Christ died on the cross, mm-hmm. He took on our sin mm-hmm. and took that to the cross with him. Mm-hmm. And that is what has died, is our sin. Mm-hmm. And what we are given every single day is new life. And mm-hmm. every single day we are given everlasting life. And every single day we are given forgiveness. And every single day we are made new. Mm-hmm. And whether that is spiritually, emotionally, physically, mentally, and yeah, we're going to keep having some of those struggles, but we keep remembering that every day we are made new. Mm-hmm. And every day we, you know, come up with this. And so, yes, these things happen, but mm-hmm. it's not because God said, well, I'm going to choose. It's not a curse. Mm-hmm. It's not, mm-hmm. it's poor choices that other people have made. It's stuff that has happened in the, you know, there's so many things we can't control. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't mean that God chose for something to happen to you with that.
Yeah.
But God's going to walk along with you as you heal from it.
Mm-hmm. So I guess because I still struggle with my walk with God and mm-hmm. the crucifixion of the cross mm-hmm. and him coming again. Because mm-hmm. I guess this goes back to like the concept of the injuries mm-hmm. of like, does Jesus really come back or do we come back to him? Like, do we mm-hmm. come, like when I was reading another book called Breathing Underwater, and it's written by, I don't remember the name, Richard something. And he talks about the consciousness of this earth and the consciousness of our being. Mm-hmm. And so I'm just curious of like, is that really when we have that taste of heaven here on mm-hmm. earth through God living through us, of when we become that conscious mm-hmm. or that Christ conscious? Yeah.
So the pastor in me wants to say, what do you think? what do you think?
Me?
Yeah.
See, and that's where I struggle. Mm-hmm. I think honestly, I believe like the more we become the way Jesus led here on earth, the more we get to experience the depth of heaven mm-hmm. here. And I believe that we are made in his image for a reason, for him to work through us to resemble his holiness. And I think that's why I'm so passionate about the health aspect. I do believe there is a heaven. I don't know if there is a hell or if we're living mm-hmm. in it right now. So that's where my struggles are right now. Just like, okay, great. If he died on the cross, why do we still deal with suffering?
I love all of this. I got all of this. One of the things that we talk about is, so in the Lord's Prayer, we pray, your kingdom come, your will be done mm-hmm. on earth as it is in heaven.
Yeah.
And we hear, you know, again, it's Lent, so we're hearing a series of parables. You know, the kingdom of heaven is like. Uh-huh. And so we pray that the kingdom comes here on earth. And I think that God uses us to try and bring the kingdom here. And mm. I think there are ways that we can help bring the kingdom here. And you hear different stories about it, and you hear about people helping people and walking with people together. And we see glimpses of the kingdom.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And one day I think, one day when we die, we'll see it fully.
Uh-huh.
But for now, we do see the glimpses of the kingdom.
Yeah.
I don't believe in hell, actually, myself.
Yeah.
It was funny because my confirmation kids and I were just talking about
this
on Sunday.
Like, okay, give me
it. Yeah. And it was funny because I remember talking to my pastor about it when I was growing up, or actually when I was in seminary, because I had someone be like, you don't believe, and I, you know, called him and I was like, what do you think? And he's like, no, you're on the right track. because again, if we're going to talk about hell and we're going to talk about death and resurrection, and we're going to talk about Jesus dying on the cross,
right,
they don't fit together.
Yeah.
Hell is something that we have made up as humans. We like black and white. We like black and white theology. We like black and white nutrition rules. We like black and white exercise rules. We like, you know, we want to know exactly that. That's why all of the challenges and the so many day fixes or the, you know, the challenges that you have with friends of let's lose weight in 2 months or whatever it is, you know, I mean, just look at Facebook or Instagram and you'll see all of the, you know,
the
ads for it. Yeah. The fad stuff works because someone tells you exactly what to do and there's a finite time limit. And that's what a lot of people want with,
and you get the results
you know, for a little bit.
Yeah.
But not for all, you know, because again, the hard work is in the process of changing.
Yeah.
And the same thing is with, spirituality, I think. If we look at it black and white as a who's in, who's out, it's also very emotional based. And so if you're quote unquote dedicating your life to Christ or have you been saved, you know, people will say to me, you know, when were you saved? And I'm like, oh, about 2000 years ago, you know, because, in the Lutheran theology and the Lutheran tradition, we totally believe that Christ comes to us. I call it the Lutheranelle, you know, God comes to us and we go out and serve others. And we, and so we go out and we serve others and we care for our neighbor and we work to bring the kingdom here on earth. But the direction is always first God to us.
Yeah.
And so there's this great book. It's dry as dirt, but it's a great book. And it's called, Free to Be.
Okay.
And the first sentence of the book says, God has made a decision about you. And it's not about us climbing stair steps to heaven or getting our, you know, way and stuff.
Yeah.
But that's where I think a lot of what you're talking about comes in, where people talk about hell or wanting to know who's in, who's out.
Right. Yeah.
And so that's where it goes back to. It's a process. It's a journey. It's we're never there. You know, we never have an end spot with our beliefs or with our, you know, we're going to question, and there's times when you don't believe and there's times when you believe really strongly. And that's part of the journey. Like, it's good to question. It's, it's totally fine to have doubts, and to wonder and to be unsure. That's part of the process. It's part of the journey of spirituality. But that's going back. That's also why, humans have created the concept of hell. And so I guess the way that I think of hell is complete separation from God. And, for me, like, to be completely separated from God is incredibly painful. And the times that I'm doubting or the times that I'm questioning or the times that I'm unsure, because even pastors do that.
Yeah.
You know, I think everybody thinks that pastors are like these amazing people who have strong beliefs and stuff. And no, there's times that we really struggle, you know? And there's times when I'm writing a sermon and I'm like, I got nothing. Like, I don't know what to tell you. Cause I'm tired of all the crap that's going on in the world too, you know, or I'm tired of seeing this or you guys aren't being nice to one another, you know, things like that. It's I think it's more about that separation, which again, I think can go back to then our bodies, you know, when are we separated from the knowledge of our bodies? When are we separated from the knowledge of what is nourishing us, with food? When are we separated from what's nourishing us, within our inner being and our spiritual being, all of that kind of stuff.
So I guess that goes into kind of like, do you think we create hell here within our physicality? Like, we put ourselves through hell sometimes.
I actually do. You know, humans are incredibly self-destructive in a lot of ways, whether we are intending to or not. And that's where I also feel that we have a deep need for forgiveness, and forgiving one another. And I think part of that forgiveness, because, you know, so again, one of the texts that came up just a few weeks ago was, how often are we to forgive? You know, and it says 7 times 70. Well, sometimes it's forgiving the same thing that many times. Like, and I think the other thing that we miss is that forgiving isn't necessarily forgetting. You know, there's consequences and their relationships change. But really, forgiveness is more, I think, for like me, you know, our individual being. To forgive someone else is more about us being able to move on, or us being, because we can't change someone else. We can't change their actions. We can't change how they're going to feel. And so sometimes I need to forgive the same thing over and over and over again for the same person. And forgiveness is really hard.
Oh, it sucks.
Yeah.
It's super hard. And it's heavy to lift sometimes.
It really is. And so, yeah, we start with kids young saying, okay, so you're sorry.
Right.
To actually, you know, and that's where it comes back, I think, to repentance of, you know, when we talk about repentance, it's not just asking for forgiveness or giving forgiveness. It's forgiving and turning, or it's asking for forgiveness and turning your actions, changing your actions. Yeah. That's true repentance.
Yeah. As you're, well, because I gave the analogy of like forgiveness is something heavy. And I'm like, mm-hmm. why are you saying like it's something heavy to lift? Because I believe forgiveness is this concept of letting go. Mm-hmm. And it, similar to what you were just saying, like our actions change, that repentance mm-hmm. changes our actions. So I just kind of caught myself with that. I don't know why.
At the same time, think about lifting a heavy kettlebell.
Yeah.
Or thinking about lifting a heavy weight. You push that weight up and then you throw it down.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, mm-hmm. when I'm doing mm-hmm. a clean or a jerk or, you know.
There's times where you have to let go in lifts. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I think ownership and acknowledgement comes into it too. Mm-hmm. I was preaching this week on the weeping and gnashing of teeth. That's in scripture quite a bit, and you read that and you're like, oh man, like seriously. So once a week I meet with other pastors and we talk about the scripture that's coming up that we're going to preach on and kind of ideas and that sort of thing. And so we ended up talking about this concept of the weeping and gnashing of teeth and what does that mean? Mm-hmm. And one of the things that we talked about that I never thought about it like this, and I thought it was a fascinating way to think about it, is perhaps the weeping and gnashing of teeth is saying enough or no more, and having to confront someone and have them take ownership over their actions. Mm-hmm. So one of the examples that was given was, it was a pastor who at their church, they had a healing service mm-hmm. for people who have experienced sexual assault or sexual harassment, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. and they had lit candles and put them in sand. And right near the end, someone picked up the candle and snuffed it out. And they said, enough. Mm-hmm. And there were tears streaming down her face. And she was saying, maybe that's the weeping and gnashing of teeth, is being able to face the people mm-hmm. that have hurt you mm-hmm. and tell them how they have hurt you mm-hmm. and them needing to take ownership and acknowledgement over it. But then it's also us looking at the people that we've hurt mm-hmm. and taking ownership over that mm-hmm. too. And I was thinking a lot about that. I'm like, that's grace mm-hmm. of being able to mm-hmm. look at someone and say, this is how I've caused you pain. Mm-hmm. And having someone else look at me and say, this is, you know, how I've caused you pain. And then being able to move forward from that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Again, you got another sermon.
Yeah, I know. I
like, sorry.
Dang. My mind goes so many directions. I keep coming back to faith. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times I have been taught faith is what God has done for you. Mm-hmm. What is the difference of the faith that God has done for you in your past and being faithful to Him? Mm.
That's a good question. I think God is always faithful to us. Mm-hmm. I think we have a harder time being faithful to God.
Mm-hmm. And can you just give your definition first of what being faithful means for uh-huh. those who may not understand that phrase or word?
Oh gosh, I don't even know if I can put it into words. because I think it's also different for everybody.
Yeah.
Just like I think spirituality means something mm-hmm. different to different people. For me, having faith is knowing that there is a hope and there is a strength and there is more beyond myself, that I am not able to do things on my own, mm-hmm. That there's a lot that I can't explain, mm-hmm. That there are times when I don't know where my strength comes from. Mm-hmm. Ooh, that is a really hard definition. and I think it's trusting in the things that we can't see and can't explain. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what it comes back to is just a trust in the unknown. Mm-hmm. And yet knowing that unknown, that God is
ever so present in that unknown, yeah. You know, and that God is the unknown. Mm. And one day I'll be able to ask all my questions, and one day I'll be able to, and, but the thing is, at that point, probably won't matter anymore.
Yeah. And I'm just noticing your coffee mug hat.
So oh, yeah. Hey. With Troy on the other side.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, and I think, like, that's the other thing, too, is I always ask middle schoolers this.
Yeah.
Because I always have, I do, like, an interview with them, mm-hmm. so to speak, after they finish confirmation. And I'll ask them, what does your faith mean to you? Mm. And there was this one time that I had a girl in my office, and she said, well, my faith, well, this is common. They usually say, well, my faith makes me happy.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, what does that mean?
Yeah.
You know, well, it makes me happy. You know, it gives me strength, or it gives me, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. And I said, you know, and it was so funny because I remember sitting back and just saying to her, you know, if I were you, I'd be pretty upset with God. I'm like, in the last year, I was like, parents got divorced, you've had to move, you've had issues at school, you've had, you know, just kind of listed off the laundry list. And she just sobbed. I didn't know I could be mad at God. I didn't know that I could. And that's part of faith, is knowing that you can be mad at God.
This is such an excellent point.
Yeah. Thanks. Sorry.
No, sorry. Yeah. I just can't.
No,
I totally
interrupted. No. We can be mad at God. God can take it.
Yeah.
And we can say we don't believe. And we can say that we want to walk away. Mm-hmm. But I think where God's faithfulness comes in is, no matter if we walk away for 5 minutes, or if we walk away for 5 years, or for our whole life, God is still going to be there. Mm-hmm. And God is still going to be faithful to us. And God is still going to offer the same grace and the same love and the same comfort at the end of our lives, all throughout our life. But faith isn't always a feel-good thing.
Yeah.
You know,
we
want it to be.
Yeah.
But it's Good Friday.
Yeah. Yeah. I think about it of like fitness. Are you faithful with your fitness? Are you faithful showing up to the gym?
And so you're always going to grow deeper and stronger.
Yeah.
The more consistent you are.
Yeah. And so I think that's where my mind goes to faith is like, it's those moment by moments, breath by breath of like, where are you at type of thing.
And you know that it's not always easy. Not every day goes well in the gym.
No.
Not every day is easy.
Yeah.
Like, and sometimes you just break down in tears at the gym, either out of frustration or pain or whatever. And so is our faith like that too.
Yeah. 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 You talk a lot about the unknown, which I'm super excited that you bring that up. Do you think churches have manipulated the unknown in a way with saying that there's a heaven and a hell and try to dictate who God is?
I think a lot of churches have, or a lot of theologies have.
Right.
Again, I think it's because we like to feel comfortable and we like to know what's happening. And so just like any fitness ad, or I don't know what to call it, but you know, where people want to know, you know,
the results.
Yeah. You know, it's easier to bring in more people if you can give the very specific parameters, but where's the wondering? Like, where's the experience? You know, even with all of my past, you know, couple of years with nutrition and working out and stuff, there's been a lot of unknown, you know, and there's been a lot of trust that I've had to have, in my coach to know that she knows best, to know that, she's going to give me the pathway to build one thing on another, that I trust that if she has a drill for me or something new, I'm going to follow it because, it's going to make me stronger and make me better, or, you know, and a lot of it with nutrition is she spent way more time asking me questions and helping me wonder and think and process and figure out more than telling me. And that's where I think churches also come in is what if we spent more time wondering? What if we spent more time asking the, what if questions? What if we spent more time, imagining? Rather than trying to say it's exactly like this. And I was actually in a meeting last weekend and I had someone say, I thought this was really profound. They said, I like it when the sermons leave me thinking and not just telling me how it is. But it's also much scarier to not know. It's much scarier to feel like you don't have a handle on it. It's much scarier to like, again, going back to fitness, like, it's much more comfortable to have an exact layout of your plan for 4 weeks or for 12 weeks, you know, 12 months, even if you're working on something. But you have to account in any of those plans that something's going to go different. You know, you're going to get a bad night's sleep. You're going to get sick. You're going to, you know, so what do you do when that happens? It's the same thing in our spiritual lives too. So yeah, there's going to be times when you're like, yeah, God and I are rocking. This is good. You know? And then a death happens or or someone that you know has a big life event that you see them struggling and you start to ask those questions. I'm rambling.
No, but I'm just trying to think of how to wrap it up. You mentioned the teeth and I don't
know. The weaving and gnashing
gnashing of teeth.
No one likes to talk about that.
How do I phrase this? How do you develop the grace to give to others who have harmed you, knowing that you have probably harmed other people in the same way?
Grace is really hard. Because sometimes we don't want to offer it to other people. So one, I think it takes actually a lot of practice. I think it takes a deep breath and stepping back and trying to ask the question, what else is going on, whether it's in their life or whether it's in my life, and why am I reacting in that way? Sometimes it's continuing to pray over and over, please help me have the grace for this. Please help me have the ability to forgive. Please help, you know, and think again, I think it comes back to acknowledging that they've also hurt and that you've hurt someone else and that everybody is in deep need of the grace. You know, we ourselves, and to offer it to one another. It doesn't mean we're always able to, but we keep trying. And some days we're better at it than others.
How do you find grace throughout your body and just like your own physical practice?
I don't always. there are days when I stand in my closet and cry, you know? Or there's days where, I just want to sit down next to the weight that's on the floor and be frustrated and I can cry. cry a lot.
We should work out together because I cry about most of my workouts.
But I think the crying is important actually. And I think, the time and frustration is important, but I think finding the grace for our bodies is celebrating what they can do. It's celebrating what we are able to do day in and day out. And sometimes those celebrations are the little tiniest pieces. Sometimes the celebration is, I picked up my toothbrush today, you know, and I clean teeth. and some days the celebration is I lifted, you know, 145 pounds over my head. But I think it's also finding grace to say, this is where my body is at today. And I think maybe going back to with other people, this is where I can have grace for that person today. And again, it might be in the smallest possible way. But it's one little nugget and those little things build up over time. And each time I think that we are able to practice grace or practice forgiveness, we get just a little bit better at it, you know? And Lord knows there's enough times in life that we're going to have time to practice giving and receiving grace. But I think it's also receiving grace for ourselves and being able to, if someone else offers it, to be able to take it too.
I'm going to end it with this last question. You mentioned about being opened earlier, and it sounds like to receive that grace, we need to be open as well. And this goes back to the cross of just the physical position that Jesus was in, his arms are spread open wide. What is the importance of physically being open within our body to allow the mind and the spirit to be open to his grace?
So again, going back, one, we're not Jesus. And I think It's important to remember when we're struggling with grace and forgiveness is we're not Jesus. So it is going to be more difficult, but Jesus is Jesus and Jesus extends that grace to us over and over again. But when you open up your body, when you open up your mind, when you open up your heart, when you open up your soul, even if it's just that mental image of the opening, how much more can come in? Mm-hmm. When we breathe and we imagine everything opening, you know, from deep within our bellies or deep within our diaphragms, you know, how much better we feel. When we open ourselves to one another, we end up finding these deep relationships that can be, has the potential to be hurtful, but it also has the potential to be really beautiful. I think there's a reason that so many of our moves in fitness have open postures. I'm trying to think of a move that has a closed posture and there just isn't. Or I'm sure there are some, but most of our moves in some fashion are going to have an open posture. Think about when you're doing pull-ups, how open your body is. In yoga, you know, how you end your yoga practices, usually laying on the floor, you know, spread out. I think that openness again takes practice and it's difficult, but it allows us to receive. And whether it's the opening of hands to receive, whether it's the opening of the heart, whether it's the opening, you know, sometimes we have to do things physically in order for our mind and our emotions to take it on. And that's where I think fitness is so important, because what our bodies are able to do really opens up to what our minds and hearts can do too.
Awesome. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Well, we're going to end with that because that was Well, Strong Ones, thank you so much for tuning in. If you enjoyed this episode, make sure you share it out with your family and friends. Other than that, make sure you give it the 5 stars and review. And other than that, we'll be peacing out and I'll be back next week. Thanks.
Hey, Strong Ones, I have some really exciting news for you guys. I am hosting the Women of Iron Strength Retreat. This is for women who love lifting heavy, who love kettlebells, and also want to learn and progress their movement skills with the pistol squat, the pull-up, and the kettlebell press. I will be hosting this with Ann Cass Stevens down at her gym, Team Muscle Bus, in Salt Lake City, June 22nd and 23rd. So we'll be mainly focusing on those three movements, really diving into those and allowing you, giving you the skills and the tips for you can progress very quickly. We will also be diving in a little bit with the Strong First Level 1 and Level 2 movement and skills with those. This is not a Strong First event. It is just a retreat hosted by two Strong First instructors who are passionate about these three lifts, who want to empower women to feel comfortable and confident to be able to do a pistol squat, a pull-up, and a press. This retreat is not just getting PRs in those three lifts, but it's also getting PRs in life. PRs with new friendships, a new mental toughness, and a new level of emotional stamina as well. So come join us, me and Ann Cass Stevens, down at her gym, Team Muscle Bus, Salt Lake City area, June 22nd to 23rd. If you have questions about this event, let's connect. I'm on Instagram at Anna_Willard_. Hit me up in the DMs. You can find me on Facebook. Again, Anna Willard. Send me a private message. Or if you like the traditional way of connecting through email, my email is coachwillard10@gmail.com. If you have questions about this event, please let me know. Other than that, more information is down in the show notes. Again, this is an event for women, hosted by women, to get some PRs in lifting and some PRs in life. Other than that, Strong Ones, you guys have a wonderful week and blessings on your journey.